Spy movies, so sticky. Spy movies, you gotta be sticky. Oh, past the bad guys, and then you beat them. Spy movies is a little sneaky. Spy movies is so sneaky. Oh, you gotta be sneaky. If you wanna be a spy, then be sneaky. Yeah.
So, quick pre-addendum.
Not a post-addendum.
We began this episode in January, and now it's March.
We watched the first movie. We recorded. This is what we do. We do the intro before we've seen anything. Then we watch the first movie and we record. And then we watch the second movie and we record. So we watched the second movie.
And then you started to teach fourth grade.
And let me just tell you that fourth grade is insanity.
But wonderful.
I am not an elementary school teacher. I'm used to middle school, high school. So just like the sheer amount of like crying every day was really jarring. They're very sweet kids. I enjoyed a lot of it, but fourth grade is insane. It's just so funny because it's like everybody thinks that teachers like, oh, you have the whole summer off. You may have the summer off, but you're always thinking about things and you're always planning and you're always doing work. Like, I literally worked for this whole quarter, like night and day, all day, every day, all night long, all morning.
My professor at Point Loma Nazarene University mentioned you can always tell the difference between elementary school teachers and middle high school teachers, because the middle or high school teachers are always the ones who are exhausted going to their cars at the end of the day. And the elementary school teachers are the ones who are exhausted and crawling to their cars.
And I
every day
can attest to the truth of that. So for the last 3 months, I haven't been able to do anything other than teach fourth grade. Yeah, so anyway, that's what happened. Sorry we fell off the map. But we are back, and our intention is to keep going. So I did watch the second movie in January, and so we'll see.
Enjoy.
Enjoy. Well, hello.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So, each week we make each other watch a movie that we love.
But the other would never watch unless we were doing a podcast together.
And we talk about it.
Happy New Year.
Happy freaking New Year.
Part two.
It's been a very interesting couple of weeks. Went back to work, and about 2 seconds later, someone gave me COVID.
Boo.
So then I brought it home and gave it to my family. But we are all vaccinated and boosted and such, so it wasn't a huge deal. You got sicker than we did.
Yeah, go figure that happening. So I'm a two-time winner.
Do you get a prize for that?
A lot of coughing, but it could be much worse. So I'm very thankful to be vaccinated and boosted and having an amazing wife and daughter and understanding staff who's had to cover my class for the past 2 weeks. I am so sorry if any of you are listening. I know how much that sucks. I'm sorry. But yeah, I have not been in any sort of shape to be around people. So
no, I think today was the first day I was like, do you think you could handle recording?
Yeah.
And then we've had some sad passings recently. Yeah. Louis Anderson passed away. And I absolutely adore him as Mama Baskets. You watched a couple of episodes of Baskets, right?
I think I got through like the first season.
I love that show. It is so ridiculous. And I loved his portrayal of the mom because it was hilarious, but also very sincere. Okay. And then
Sidney Poitier.
Yes, Sidney Poitier. Was it his daughter that was in Death Proof or his granddaughter?
You know, I don't remember.
Yeah, so he passed away shortly after Betty White.
Yeah.
And then Keith is very heartbroken because his Tori Amos has passed.
The male Tori Amos has passed, so Meatloaf.
Yeah. So what are we doing this week?
We're watching spy movies, basically.
That's right. We get to watch Richard Grieco in one of my favorite movies from high school, If Looks Could Kill. And I'm a little afraid that it didn't age well.
I'm expecting an incredibly woke movie with no gay humor or making fun of any race and completely respectful to every woman. So, yeah, and I'm expecting stellar fight choreography as well.
Okay, I'm just going to allay your fears. None of those things will be true.
I would never watch this movie, but I was interested that you were like, oh my gosh. I was like, I've never heard anything that movie isn't just horrendous.
I've seen
so,
it 455 times.
Wow. Well, get ready for 456, baby.
Yep. And then I get to watch a movie that I've never heard of in my entire life.
The reason we're watching this and not a Bond movie is this is the only way on the planet I'll get you to watch it is for podcast. Mm-hmm. So it's Kingsman, The Secret Service, not the newest one that came out. So it's the original one. It's based off of a comic, which I know you're excited about. I've only seen it once. If I remember correctly, my friend Fernando J. Huerto introduced me to this. So pretty decent fight choreography and action. And
he should know because some not he's safe in for work, China so. Right now being in a choreography show. Well, not a choreography
show. That's just really...
Sorry, Jay.
Yes.
He is in a stunt show.
Exactly. How to Train Your Dragon, which won awards this year, actually, for the best... I think the best theme park stunt show on the planet, I think, is what it won. So, yeah.
Praise.
Yeah, and it's great. He got to actually, he was on the stunt team that helped to create it. He actually gets to do it. He's got a crazy bump he has to do where he's shot off of a bridge and it looks like there's no way he could survive it.
Well, that's what he likes to do.
It is awesome. It is very awesome. So congrats, Jay. And
shout out to Jay.
So you ready to watch some Secret Service movies?
Yeah, let's do the Queen's Service.
This is the least excited I've ever seen you. I cannot wait. This is going to be crazy. My first question is, has this movie ever been on How Did This Get Made?
No.
Because get them on the line stat.
No.
I want a collaboration right now. It doesn't even have to be with me. It can be with you. So if you guys know the producers, get us in touch.
You just tweeted them.
Have their people, you know, get in touch with my people.
We don't have people.
So, Corey.
Yeah.
How did this movie hold up for you?
Well, I was really excited when I was watching the opening credits and I noticed who wrote this movie.
Who wrote this movie?
Darren Star from Beverly Hills 90210.
And I think this movie is why Darren Scott is known well for his writing. Star.
Darren Star. Not,
yeah.
I'm sorry. 90210 was a groundbreaking show for teenagers.
It was. I was there. Yes.
This isn't going well already. I looked at it as a fond memory, and there was some parts of it, which I'm sure you'll talk about. I remember not understanding.
I think people would say, you know, this movie has some plot holes, and I would vehemently disagree with that. There are asteroids from outer space.
Look, you just have to lift your willing suspension of disbelief.
That is true.
I do have to say that I was so excited to learn that Linda Hunt and I are the same size. I looked her up, and she's 4'9".
Ilsa Grunt, is that her name?
But anyway, did this movie hold up? It held up as a nice memory. Do you have one of your famous pitches?
Oh, I do. So my pitch is, a high schooler has to go on his French class's trip to Europe to graduate high school, where he is mistaken for an American deep cover spy. Time is ticking for him to save the world, but only if looks could kill.
What does that mean?
It means I have to put the title of the movie at the end of the pitch, and it doesn't make any sense. So I had to throw it in there. Okay. So we got to start with school. And so we have this graduating class, and there's the stereotypical valedictorian giving a speech. Richard Grieco shows up. He's late. He has a slacker friend. We're supposed to know that they're the jokers of the class. And it comes time for them to graduate. And so as Richard Grieco is walking across the stage, we find out that, wah, wah, you don't get to graduate because you flunked French. Cut to the home scene. Richard Grieco is getting yelled at by his dad, and his mom's being kind of supportive. And mommy goes, no problem. I'll just call the French teacher and I'll just straighten this out and we'll get you on the field trip that the French class is going on
to
Paris.
Which made me laugh because if you think that the French teacher is answering the phone a minute after graduation, you are high.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
So we've established the slacker. Okay, now we need to establish it's a spy movie. We go to some place in Europe. I don't think they say where, but it's like, you know, your typical rich person's study.
He's at a chateau in France. A green screen chateau.
Yes. Okay.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh. There are so many green screens in this movie. We're in this study in a French chateau with Roger Reese, I believe is his name, mm-hmm. who is playing an uppity diplomat-ish type. Roger Reese, you probably know from Robin Hood Men in Tights, being the sheriff of Nottingham.
Cheers. Wasn't he Diane's like fiance?
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Steranko is his name. And Steranko's assistant is Linda Hunt, playing the aforementioned Ilsa Grunt. One of the butlers is clearly the Jaws style henchman, like Jaws from James Bond. And he kills this other bureaucrat they're talking to who doesn't want to go along with what Steranko is saying. But don't worry. A James Bondish secret agent is also on the grounds because they have the best cameras ever completely throughout this woods around the chateau. His name is Blade.
And where are the cameras placed?
Oh, they're all outside, right?
Inside of snowmen.
Oh, yeah. He does like the James Bond thing and there's all these like
a snowmobile.
And like everything explodes. Like
for no reason.
It was just, I mean, literally someone said, hey, make it like a James Bond movie. It's like, oh, what does that happen? Well, everyone explodes. Oh, okay. No sense. Physics is not a thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, he gets through everybody and bursts through the window and he takes his ski mask off.
Well,
and
he takes his whole entire outfit off and he's got like a tuxedo under it.
Like, I wish to God, they should have just embraced this as a Naked Gun. They just should have gone flat out. That needed the scene where he just took his hand and went rip. And like the whole thing like flies off and he's in a tuxedo.
They did.
And it's Roger Daltrey who gets top billing here. And this is the guy from The Who. So, you know, he's the lead singer from The Who.
Oh, I was like, he looks really familiar.
So Blade is about to save the day. He won't be fooled again. Mm-hmm. Except he is by Ilsa Grunt, Linda Hunt, who get out of nowhere has this cool like golden whip with a hook at the end. And she schools him. It is by far the best fight scene of the whole movie. So she kills him. Cut to the good guys. So we need to have the headquarters scene of the high muckety mucks who are saving the world. And they're like, well, another European finance minister has been killed. So evidently the European finance ministers are being killed across Europe.
They're getting picked off one by one.
Yeah, and no one really cares, evidently. It's not the biggest news story in the world, because I promise you that would be the biggest news story in the world if that was happening. And they're like, gee, and they killed our best agent. And the only person left is Steranko. So they think Steranko is a good guy.
And he's next.
And so the U.S. general, who's just there out of nowhere, he's like, don't worry, we're sending our best agent. He's a super secret deep cover agent that no one knows what he looks like or his age. He could be anyone. And I was just like, okay, hold on. You have a secret agent working for you, which you don't know what he looks like.
He's deep cover.
And you don't know what age he is. But his name's going to be Michael Corbin. And our nickname is Mother. And it's just like, oh my God, really? Okay. We got Michael Corbin's on the case. And we're going to call him an hour before his flight. And don't worry, he's flying from Detroit to France or wherever it is we're going to fly to.
France,
yes, because it's a French class. So we go straight back to the airport, where we find out at that moment that for the first time we find out Richard Grieco's name is Michael Corbin, which I thought was a very clever thing to do in the script. I thought it was clever not to say his name until we say the name.
Yo, Michael.
Yeah.
Michael Corbin.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was clever. On the outside, you got the French class. What's really weird is on this trip are people who have already graduated. So I'm kind of like, wait a second. Is this summer school to make up a credit, or is this a trip?
I think it was a class trip, and they let him use it as summer school to make up for.
Yeah, that's not.
I think it was something his mom and.
Well, no, in the kid, because in the kitchen at the beginning, which yeah. I just. So anyway, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Are you really going to try to pick apart like the?
There are no plot holes. Just flaming meteors destroying okay. the planet's surface of this story. So. We got Michael Corbin outside, and then inside we got Michael Corbin, the super secret agent, mm-hmm. is inside with the desk agent who's preparing his first class ticket. But before she can give it to him, Michael Corbin is paged over the airport loudspeaker to go to the first class lounge for a call. So he's like, okay, I'll be right back. And she's like, yeah, no problems. And so he takes off to take the call. The first class lounge is being cleaned, which makes no, you wouldn't do that in the middle of the day.
Is 24 hours, Keith.
Yeah, I know. So, at some point. So you clean it at 3 a.m. So he goes in, picks up the phone, and the woman's like, hi, this is mother, because it's Richard Grieco's mother. And so she like tells him, gives him some instructions. So he's
like, pick up another bottle of Chanel while you're there.
For grandma. And Michael Corbin, the secret agent, is just like super confused, hangs up, and who's there? But Elsa Grant is there to kill, and just she annihilates him. She is, was it, I don't think it was a necklace. I think the vacuum cleaner was some sort of like machine gun, shotgun thing.
There was a gun in the vacuum cleaner.
Oh my gosh. So she blows Michael Corbin away. And she's
dressed up like a little flight attendant.
Oh my gosh. So he's dead. So we go back to that desk agent.
This is my favorite scene.
And so, and she looks over and she sees the high schoolers. And I use that term lightly because this is one of the problems I should have mentioned early on is that, sure, his hair isn't made up, but Richard Grieco at the filming of this was 25. And he looks like a good 30, like trying to dress down, which is not his fault.
What they did to his hair, though, they obviously like they comb his hair like forward. So he looks like a big dork.
And
like
it's just
high school dork.
So Michael Corbin's the first one. And as they're bounding up to the gate, the desk agent is like, hell no. And she just like, I'm not dealing with those kids.
I'm taking my break.
And so she leaves. And so the other desk agent has to like move over. Michael Corbin, Richard Grieco, is like, hey, I'm Michael Corbin, and shows his passport. And she's like, oh, your ticket's already ready, and hands him the first class ticket, which should have gone to the secret agent, who is now dead. And so he's stoked, and all the other high schoolers are bummed because, you know, we've established that.
No way, man.
Yeah, like this French, his French teacher, who looks like about the age of Richard Grieco, says, I'm going to make your vacation horrible, and you're going to have to sit next to me. And so again, we have another airport page for Michael Corbin, except this time to do the yellow courtesy phone, which is the normal phone. He picks it up. It's mother again. Except he's totally confused, and they say, like, oh, another agent will be there with you. And he's like, okay.
Because it's the secret agent mother.
You see, and so this is
not his mother.
The call for Michael Corbin from a 40-year-old mother.
From a telephone booth.
From a telephone booth.
In front of the airport.
In front of the airport gets routed
to the first class lounge.
And then the supranational organization of MI6 and the CIA and who all knows what else, they get routed to the yellow courtesy phone that anyone could pick up.
I did have that thought when we were watching it. I was like, what?
Oh, my gosh. So we go from there, and then Elsa Grunt is trying to dispose of the body, and she's put the body in the cart. The cart that flight attendants use down the center of the aisle. Mm-hmm. Another flight attendant, who is the head flight attendant, catches her and is like, what are you doing? And she's like, and she's like, we have to go to the flight right now. And so Elsa, because there's other people around too who have shown up, is like, all right. And so, you know, basically a dead body is just left there in that cart in the airport because she's got to get on the flight.
Yeah.
I always have liked Linda Hunt in NCIS LA. She does an amazing job in that show. Mm-hmm. If you were ever going to give an Oscar in a C movie, it belongs to Linda Hunt. And I will die on this hill. Because not only was she incredible in the fight choreography early on, but she is the best, grumpiest stewardess I have ever seen. And it was hilarious. She was gold in that airplane scene. She was she's gold the whole movie.
Asking her questions, and she's like, how should I know?
Yeah, she's just like, she's saying everything every flight attendant I'm sure has wanted to say. Like, it reminded me when I was in Russia. I was flying from Moscow to the Ukraine, and she was like that level of stewardess. When you're flying Aeroflot, number one, don't. But number two, you don't mess with the flight attendants.
Don't ask them for
like
stuff.
They are babushkas. I am sure they have a knife on you, on them. They will take, I mean, you'll have animals on your flight. You'll have, there were like seats with TVs on them. Like, it was amazing.
Like a bus in the sky?
Oh my gosh, it was. It was. And like, then those flight attendants were pissed. So Ilsa Grunt could have been one of those stewardesses, which I loved. There are so many gags in this movie. There is a U.S. agent. They have a very much like Shaft. The only black person is like Shaft on this plane. And he's helping Richard Grieco without Richard Grieco knowing it. And then the French teacher the whole time is trying to get Richard Grieco in trouble. And there's
she's in charge of him and he's in first class and she wants to know why the heck that is. And so she's like trying to, and they're, yeah.
Yeah, you can't take her side. She's horrible. She's a shrew. I mean, who cares?
I will take her side. The whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, he like totally ruined her trip. He's in charge of him.
And there's a pretty stewardess that he's kind of flirting with. And then, you know, and then you got Elsa, who is just pissed because she's on this stupid flight. So she kills the agent who's helping Richard Grieco without knowing it.
A nightcap, perhaps?
She slaps the crap out of the French teacher. She, like, anyway, so we get off of this flight. And then
she realizes Michael Corbin is on this plane.
Yeah, so she overhears that it's Michael Corbin and da-da-da. And so she's like, oh, I've got to, you know. Although you can't tell me that Ilsa Grunt wouldn't cut a fool. Like, she would have cut that head stewardess before they had got her on the plane.
Yeah, but I was wondering why she didn't.
So we're in France. The French teacher is still trying to grab Michael Corbin. We get to the airport, and then one of the British guys, like, shows up to pick him up, and it's like, he's like, yeah, my French teacher's after me. And he's like, oh, the French teacher. Like, he thinks it's a code name. So the British agent just kind of casually, like, turns around and shoots his gun, like, three times in the middle of this airport. And hits.
Guns in an airport.
Hits, of course, the French teacher's suitcase is the one that gets hit. And everyone ducks down and is going crazy. And he rushes with Richard Grieco out, and they go into a car, and then they start taking off. Elsa just happens to be behind this whole thing. And so she's convinced that the French teacher is also an operative and that all these high schoolers are mercenaries, which, to her credit, they're all at least 23 to 25. For them to say that they're high schools, I would also question that cover story. This is the point in the movie where I realize this is not going to be a James Bond movie. This is Naked Gun. Because at this point, who just happens to be on the curb, but the jaws like assassin guy who's got like not metal teeth, but he's got this metal hand. She was like, that was the car. And he's like, and he like gets out this huge machine gun in the middle of, and like right on the curb. And she's like, no, not here. And it's just like, at that point, I just burst out loud. I mean, I did cackle several times in this movie because it was just so ridiculous.
Like that time when I was dropping you off for dinner, detective, and you got out your gun to make sure that you had it, and the maids at the hotel that you were walking into were freaking out on the curb.
Hey, I was an actor. Those were...
I was like, you might want to not wave that around.
You're like, wait, wave what around? And I'm like waving the gun around.
I think you just gave those maids a heart attack.
Aww. So,
that
yes.
That's ridiculous.
So, yeah,
I'm
that's...
surprised they didn't shut the hotel down that night.
So they...
Just waving a gun around in valet.
Yeah, you know. It's fine. It's downtown. So, of course, what do we have in every James Bond movie? The weapons laboratory with Q. We had a bunch of funny moments. I think my favorite was this guy who was, like, drinking coffee. And there was a dummy in front of him. So, like at a table.
He
was
like, sitting at a desk.
He was sitting at a desk. And he's like, oh, excuse me, I just need to take a sip. And he takes a sip. And as soon as he takes a sip of the coffee, the desk, like, flips. The front of the desk, like, flips over and beheads the guy in front of him. That was the one that I just... But yeah, a whole bunch of just explosions and all this other crazy stuff. And so
they're working on their invention.
So they're doing a walk and talk. So they're doing a walk and talk where they're trying to explain to Richard Grieco, this is the mission, this is what you got to do. And the whole time,
he doesn't understand.
Richard Grieco is like, no, and he's freaking out. And he's trying to convince these people that he's a high school dropout. And then they bring out the car, which I should have looked up. I think it's like a Lambo or a Ferrari. I'm not quite sure.
It's red.
It's red. I'm going to say Lambo. I'm going to say an early 90s Lambo. I'm guessing what it was.
It's like, looks like a triangle.
Yeah, it clearly is like half of the production budget of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And so he sees that and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you have 100,000 pounds in the back, 100,000, yeah, in money and a tux, and you just need to go to a casino and make sure no one kills Steranko. But he's like, wait, I can take this car. You're going to give me this car and that money to go to a casino and watch a guy. Okay. And suddenly he's a secret agent. So so he jumps in the car, peels out of the underground lab, and, you know, Jaws is waiting on the street to watch him. And then we also see Gabrielle Anwar. She's following in a Nissan Sentra, if I remember correctly. Was it a lotus?
They said it was a lotus.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it looked like a...
But maybe.
It was definitely not the...
Nissan Sentra.
No, yeah, no. One of them is driving... I remember looking at... Well, someone was driving like a Nissan 3000Z or something like that. So we have the world's weirdest chase scene. Jaws wants to kill Richard Grieco. Richard Grieco doesn't know what's going on. Gabrielle is trying to get him to go away or like to pull over or just like leave. And then also, just for funsies... The tour bus of his high school is also just like in the middle of
right
this.
There.
And so.
Well, it's so they could see him in action.
Gabrielle is trying to tell him to back off. And so Richard Grieco can't hear her. So he tries to roll down the windows. In the process of not understanding how rolling down windows work.
Well, the window's not working.
He kept trying to adjust the rear view mirrors. Like, I think if I remember it, I saw an icon of windows, like right below it. So, of course, he doesn't do that. He goes to the right in the console with all of these like lasers, ejector seat, missiles. And so he keeps clicking those things. And of course, he just clicks them perfectly at times to create like a bulletproof shield, a parachute. Shoots a missile to the forward, later on shoots a missile backwards to get rid of Jaws for a little bit. Basically, he's just chasing Gabrielle, and in the midst of this, he touches a button.
And he keeps yelling, "What's your name?"
Oh my gosh. So Agent Jersey Shore evidently touches a button that's like, shut down vehicle, that splattens all four of its tires and shuts off the engine. Gabrielle keeps going. He's like, oh, and he, of course, and this was funny.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, it just like hits the control panel and both windows roll down, which I am not too proud to say that was funny. So he's got to change all four tires.
In France. On the side of the road.
With Gabrielle ahead of him. Mm-hmm. And so somehow we now cut to the big casino because it's a James Bond movie.
Well, and of course he knows exactly where to go.
And of course.
With no map.
And of course that Lambo has four spare tires that... And so anyway,
he's like, man, those British guys are going to kill me.
Yeah. So he's changed all four tires and he gets there right when Gabrielle does. And he sees her outside the casino.
He watches her go in the hotel.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's like, what's your name?
So anyway, so he tries to get in and they're like, no, sir, you're not dressed correctly. Because of course there's a tux, which we've already seen in the back. At this point, he's finally allowed to have product in his hair. He's a great looking guy. He's handsome. Mm-hmm. He looks 35. So... He's walking around the casino, taking as many champagnes as he can find whenever a waitress walks by.
Well, wouldn't you?
No. And so at...
If it's free.
So it's at the... So we got to have the James Bond scene where James Bond...
At the baccarat
table. Outplays the main bad guy so he can be upset.
Right.
So he walks up to the center table. And, of course, Gabrielle is right next to him. You know, he kind of saunters in like you're not supposed to.
He walks up to the table and he's like, what's your name?
He's like, great, 21. I kill at this game. And they're like, no, it's Baccarat. Starenko is right there. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to talk to him. He's like, hey, I'm trying to talk to a lady. And twist pass over to her. And she's like, Mariska. And he's like, oh, a name that's almost as beautiful as you are. And it was just like...
But what was the name of the Starenko's lady?
And so Starenko has a lady who, beautiful woman.
Not subtle at all.
No, not subtle at all. Her name is Ariola. And so, of course, Richard Grieco doesn't know what he's doing, ends up bending all of his money on accident. And, of course, he gets the one card he needs to win. Mariska is now infatuated a little bit with him. And Starenko is like, dang, oh. What an agent. I can't believe this guy's a new breed of agent. Tells Elsa Grunt, who's there, he's like, he's fascinating. So he had a thing for Richard Grieco. I'm like 98% sure. And Linda's like, talks to Jaws, and she's like, go kill both of them. So we get to the hotel room, and who's there but Ariola. My favorite part of the seduction scene is how she's still wearing stilettos in bed. So she's got this like negligee.
That's sexy.
Yeah, so she's wearing this like
feet is not sexy.
Beautiful.
It's like a slip night dress.
She puts him down on the bed, and it's 91, so he's wearing tidy whities. And she says, close your eyes. And so he closes his eyes. And she gets out a scorpion. Just
her pet scorpion.
And puts a scorpion on his leg. And out of nowhere, Richard Grieco goes, wait a second, and jumps up. And when he jumps up and runs to the bathroom, the scorpion flies up into the air. And so he's trying to find condoms. And so while that's happening, Ariella is trying to find the scorpion.
Ariola
is trying to find where the scorpion is. And so, of course, the scorpion somehow is hanging on the ceiling and then drops down into the back of her slip. And so she's just kind of writhing in, like, agony, but kind of not. And
it
so
it could be construed as sexy.
I don't know where, but Richard Rico is, like, enjoying the show.
He's like, whoa.
So the Jaws dude, showing up late, I forget, he somehow, like, takes out a doorknob or something like that to look in the room.
He busts a hole in the door with his metal hand.
And he gets out a bazooka and blows up the room. Richard Rico is racing out of the hotel. His Lambo or whatever pulls up. And when the passenger opens, he looks in and there's, like, just a gun. He's like, oh, it's you. And the you is, of course, Mariska. And so we find out that Mariska was Blade's daughter. She needs to stop Starenko and kill him. And so,
because the agents are all wrong. They don't need to protect him. He's the one doing it.
Yeah, and so Grieco's like, oh, yeah, I need to do this because I need to follow through. So
all of a sudden, he's a secret agent.
Yeah, so we go to this, like, mansion, castle.
It's the chateau.
It's the original chateau?
Yeah.
Okay. They're watching the place, and it's crawling with guards. And then also, the tour bus is showing up, which has his French teacher and the high schoolers.
Just, you forgot all the funny tour bus parts.
Oh, I wouldn't say I forgot it. So he's a moron, so they get caught, like, immediately trying to get on the grounds.
He finally, like, tells her that he's not actually an agent. And then she's like, okay.
Yeah, she's fine with it. And so they get thrown in, like, a dungeon. We now need to have the formal dinner with the bad guy. And the bad guy explains all his plans. We find out that Starenko has been taking all of the other European countries' gold reserves and smelting it into new coins with his face on it. Because with all the other finance ministers down, of course they're going to have to turn to someone. And of course they're just going to turn to him. It makes, like, zero sense whatsoever. So I've got all these European bureaucrats with me. I have all those people tonight. And what I was going to do is I was going to give them champagne with the slow acting poison that within a couple months they will start dying of natural causes. And I'm like, oh, that's the coolest poison ever. He's like, I'm gonna kill them all tonight and I'm gonna blame you because you'll be in the wreckage. And I'm like, okay, hold on. That was a pretty good plan, actually, Starenko. I don't understand why you're switching it. Rico's like, you gotta let go of my friends. And Starenko is not impressed.
He
so
says, kill them all and make him watch.
Yeah. And so he gets taken back to the cell and he has another tender moment with Mariska. And he's like, no, we're gonna do it. I'm going to follow through. And so he has this, like, gum explosive stuff. And so he uses that to break out of the cell. And then there's machine guns. And suddenly he knows how to shoot a machine gun accurately. As he's going around running and shooting and killing people because, you know, that's how machine guns work.
He's in an action movie, Keith, okay?
Yeah, with LA Gear tennis shoes. We find out that the French teacher and the high schoolers, they're in this shark tank cage above the gold that's being smelted. Mm-hmm. And so they start to lower it, and so he's going to save them, but they can't figure out how to stop the stupid cage from lowering. There's this big pipe labeled liquid nitrogen. So he takes off the hose, and the hose completely sweeps both of his feet and his leg. So, not a chemistry major, I'm pretty sure both of his feet and his leg would have fallen off. So he saved the high schooler and the French teacher, and he's like, Miss Grober, you need to be the French teacher. And she says, I understand. And takes, like, a scarf she's been wearing.
It's her Parisian scarf.
And she puts it, like, as Rambo, like, over her forehead.
Yeah.
It's like, you go save the diplomats. I'm going to take care of him because Jaws has shown up. And
don't let anybody drink anything.
Yeah. We kind of have a West Side Story fight scene with Richard Grieco and Jaws. Jaws ends up basically falling into the molten gold. And so from there,
explodes.
We go to this nice dining banquet hall area. Starenko's like, to the future, like, we'll all have champagne. And I'm like, dude, I thought he said he's not going to do the champagne thing. So I was confused.
Instead of using the other poison that takes a long time, he was just going to poison them.
Oh, okay.
That night.
Oh, okay. I missed that
and
part.
So there's the guy with his saber, and he cuts the champagne bottle, which I think is an amazing trick.
Which was Corey's favorite part. Outside of Linda Hunt. And then the French teacher's like, don't drink anything. And
she goes, bar's closed. It's Biden. And everyone's like, oh.
Is it? I don't know. But it looks like champagne, so I should drink it. And so Richard Grieco shows up and he's like, I'll drink with you, Starenko. And he gives Starenko a champagne and says,
you drink it.
You drink it. And Strenko gets mad and throws it up against the wall and says something about, I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you, your dog, and your kids. And so out of nowhere, a couple guards show up and they pick up Arishka and they start going through the back of the banquet. Also, the castle's starting to explode because something with the nitrogen and the gold, and they never quite explain why explosions start happening.
Why does it blow?
Because of something. Physics. Look it up. Starenko and Elsa and Mariska are up.
And all the gold.
Are going, which is somehow conveniently transported.
At the roof.
And so they've got all that stuff in the helicopter, and they're going to take off, except they're too heavy. So Starenko's like, get rid of her. So instead of killing her, they just, like, toss her out of the helicopter. And so Elsa's like, you got to get rid of the gold. And he's like, well, do I? And he's got, because they're a little higher up, being like, kicks her out or something, but she has the lasso whip, and so she gets back onto the helicopter.
He's just overtaken by greed.
Yeah, and so she starts climbing up. Richard Grieco, by the way, still has his machine gun, and he cuts this incredibly symmetrical circle
with his machine gun
right below where the gold is. The gold's starting to fall off, and so Starenko's just really, he's like, no, my gold! Like, he kicks Linda Hunt off again, and she dies. And then...
You laughed when she fell out of the...
It is so clearly a mannequin. And then Starenko somehow, like, so he gets up higher and is leaning backwards, trying to, like, hold on to the gold.
His gold is falling out of the hole that was shot.
And so he falls out of the hole somehow. And then it's like,
he goes down with
the, which
gold.
The whole thing was like, I've never flown a helicopter. I just know it's incredibly complex. You've
you
got
might need to have your hand or
like,
foot on,
yeah,
a
you've got
pedal.
It like in your, and so he's wrestling with Linda. Helicopter's fine. Trying to get his gold, helicopter's fine. And I'm just like, who's driving the helicopter? Because it's remarkably still in the air. And then he falls out, and the helicopter's still up there. The helicopter crashes onto the roof.
The blades come off of the helicopter, and it's coming at him.
And they don't move to the side.
I know.
I was like, just like, why don't you just move to the side?
Running forward.
Instead of trying to outrace the blades of death, which are much faster than you. So they eventually, at the last second, slide down. Richard Grieco has the LA Gear suction cup shoes. And so he kind of walks down, but we've established it's not very sticky.
Did you catch when the building finally exploded and both of his feet came off of the wall? And
oh,
he was
my
still
gosh.
Stuck to the wall?
Yeah, and their back, his back was flush against the wall. It was so bad. You want to talk about green screen? It is clearly... a green screen for the
it's
rest
like
of the
a
movie.
Green curtain.
Oh my gosh!
It's like waving.
And like it's a doll. It's clearly a dollhouse.
It's on fire.
On fire. So, oh by the way, the British agents and the American general just show up to the bad guy's lair. At this point, they're like, "Oh, what happened to Corbin?" And Corbin shows up with Mariska, and they're British, and the Americans are fighting over who gets to send him on his next mission. He's like, "Dudes, all I'm doing is I'm taking a big old vacation." And maybe learning a little French. And like, boom, a William Deere film. Like, it is the most anticlimactic final shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know because you rewound it and made me watch it again.
Oh.
You were like, that was the final shot?
I was trying to figure out also who was the writer. And like, they were.
I told you, Darren Star.
Oh, my gosh. So that was a movie. Well, so originally the movie, the story is by Fred Decker, mm-hmm. and evidently was originally for Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's who it was originally for.
Uh-huh.
And
that would have been more of a comedic.
Yeah.
Bent.
And that's kind of where it went. And so, Fred Decker wrote another movie, which came out in 91, also did the story for another movie, which I used to love. I don't know if you've ever seen. It's called Ricochet.
Not seen Ricochet.
It's Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might need to watch Ricochet together.
No, we don't.
Really? You don't know what it's about?
I don't care.
It's police. It's drama.
I don't
wanna. So I felt like something kind of was like lost in translation between the story and the script. If you remember what Anthony Michael Hall used to look like,
mm-hmm.
and put him next to, you know, the 30-year-old Richard Grieco, it's not the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
I never bought Richard Grieco as a high schooler. So there were so many holes. If you had just switched it to college graduation
mm-hmm.
instead of high school graduation. So I think you could have kept the fish out of water aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to make Richard Grieco seem like a 17-year-old virgin like they did in this movie, it was just like, And then I think also they really needed to lean in to the Naked Gun cartoonish aspects of it. When it was just completely not serious whatsoever, parts of the movie really worked.
The whole like relationship between he and Marishka was just like ridiculous.
She looked way too young for Richard Grieco in this movie. Like she could have passed for like a high school senior, and he, with a little gray in his hair, could have gotten the senior discount at Danny. Well, I love how her dad's a secret agent, but she understands everything about the mission. Yeah, I don't think that would work that way.
She went to bring your daughter to work day.
Yeah, evidently. So I think, like I said earlier, I feel like they took the Anthony Michael Hall script and just tried to give it to
Richard Grieco,
yeah. Which doesn't make sense.
It would definitely would have been a different movie if it was Anthony Michael Hall. It would have been way more like, oh, do you believe this stuff that's happening to me?
Yeah. Also, you know Richard Grieco is super cool. Even Richard Grieco can't run around in a bright white LA gear, high tops, waving a machine gun in the general direction of bad guys who suddenly fall over. You know, it just doesn't make sense. So no.
You loved it.
I
7 thumbs up.
So the rating for this movie for me has to be 2 thumbs down. So it is, there's a germ of an idea, the where it leans into slapstick, it's got its moments. It is like, it's kind of like a Naked Gun version of James Bond. I wouldn't say,
but not on purpose.
Yeah. And some of the characters kind of get it. Like the British MI6 guy. Mm-hmm. I feel like he gets it.
Yeah.
He understands what movie he's in. Linda Hunt is spectacular, and she makes it work because she believes it, where everyone else is kind of like, oh.
She's taking the Alan Rickman approach.
Yeah. So, so Linda Hunt, the Alan Rickman of
this movie.
Of this movie. So.
How do we start again? I don't even remember. We watched.
Well, it's March.
What did we watch? Oh, yeah. We watched The Kingsman Secret Service. So, Keith, yes. I know that this is another one of your one-hit wonders.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it one time.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did it hold up for you?
I thought it held up pretty well. It is completely unrealistic. And I had forgotten how completely unrealistic it was. But outside of that, yeah, so I think it's a great movie. I think it's totally worth watching. But the question is, does Corey think it's worth watching?
It was funny because, as we've said, I watched this in January. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, the big points, but I didn't remember. So I had to actually, I cheated a little bit. I went back because I didn't want to pay $3.99 again and watch it again. So I.
Oh, that's not a good sign. I would have been fine with that. But just,
I know you would. You were like, oh, we have to watch it again. And I was like, no, I got it. So I checked Wikipedia. I found the transcript and then I found the script.
Mm-hmm.
Because the script that I had found online was apparently like the original.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually called The Huntsman.
Mm-hmm.
In that script. And there was a bunch of other things that were different, like a gazelle. Is it mm-hmm. gazelle or juzelle?
Gazelle.
Gazelle was a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bunch of different things that were different and out of order. So then I had to look at the transcript. Mm-hmm. But the transcript doesn't explain like what's going on. And it's a very action sequence heavy like film.
Yes.
And so I was looking at Wikipedia, the transcript and the original script to try to remember the movie.
So we have no idea how this is going to go.
Really a lot of work. And I have like 9 pages of notes, and normally I have 2 pages of notes. So my pitch for this movie is an underdog proves himself worthier than more privileged candidates for a secret independent intelligence agency and must help in stopping a megalomaniac billionaire who wants to cull Earth's population to stop global warming.
Very good.
Thank you. I don't remember what point it was, but for the whole like first half of this movie, I was very frustrated, irritated. I hated it. I didn't want to sit there. I even stopped taking notes because mm-hmm. I was just like, it's like so much I didn't get. So I was a little irritated at the very first part.
It is a little confusing at first. It makes more sense as the movie goes on.
Okay. Says you. In the beginning, there's a scene and they're in the Middle East and it's like in the 90s and there's like a group of, I guess, soldiers and they're standing around and I didn't really understand what was happening, but apparently a soldier like sacrifices himself for the team. And so Colin Firth, who plays Harry Hart, blames himself, and he then visits the soldier's widow and her young son in England, and he gives them a medal, and he teaches them this, like, secret code phrase, which is Oxford's not brogues, and that will assist them in a future emergency. So then we fast forward 17 years, and there's this confusing scene about a professor, and he's, I guess he's being held hostage or something. He's, like, being kidnapped or something by some people in this house. And there's, like, all this whiskey going. They're talking about whiskey or, I don't remember, brandy. I can't remember which. Some sort of liquor. Make a big deal about it. And then somebody else shows up to, like, save him. And then he gets, like, sliced in half by this chick who's got machete running blades instead of legs. And then, like, Sam Jackson shows up. So apparently the guy who got sliced up was Lancelot, which is a code name, because he's an agent with the Kingsman Secret Service, and they all have Arthur Round Table code names. And Harry Hart enters a fancy tailor shop on Savile Row, and is a cover for the Secret Service agency. And they have a very virtual meeting, which was kind of cool. They all have these ugly glasses. The glasses actually reminded me of my grandpa. My grandpa was a helicopter mechanic for the Navy. My grandparents would, like, take me to the base, like, whatever. when I would vacation at Chateau Grandmont. Anyway, so he had these government-issued ugly brown plastic thick, like, glasses, which is exactly what the glasses that they had were.
It's very Google Glasses type of thing, where it's, like, it's got a lot of extra things that you're
able to do. Because they come into the meeting, and nobody's actually, well, the only people who are physically there are Colin Firth as Lancelot, and then we have Arthur, who is played by Michael Caine, and he's, like, the head of it, and so it's just them physically in the room, and then everybody, you put the glasses on, and then you're in a meeting with all these people. So they're in this meeting, and they all take a drink to Lancelot, and they realize that they need to replace him, like, ASAP. We return to the boy from earlier. His name's Eggsy, played by Taron Egerton, and he has now grown up. But he's a dropout loser who hangs around the wrong crowd. And although he seems really good at parkour, and he lives with his mom and her super loser gangster husband.
He's some sort of underboss of
Exactly. He's, like, total middle management. So he lives with his mom, and then also his toddler stepsister. And his stepfather is abusive to everyone except, hopefully, fingers crossed, the toddler. They have a very stressed relationship. They don't like each other for obvious reasons. And so, fast forward, I'm not going to go, you know, too far into it. But basically, Eggsy ends up stealing his stepfather's car. And he takes it on a backwards joyride and crashes it right in front of the police. Needless to say, he's arrested, but not before he tells his buddies to run. And he'll take the blame for it. Which shows us that he's a stand-up guy, and he ain't no snitch, innit?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just going with the lingo of the area, of the region. He's at the police station, and they're, like, yelling at him to give up his buddies, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, again, he's an upstanding guy. He ain't no snitch. And he uses his one phone call to call the number on the back of that medal that Harry Hart had given to him when he was younger. Harry Hart shows up and bails him out. And they're kind of taking a walk, and he explains how Eggsy's father saved his life, and he's read Eggsy's file, and his dad would be very disappointed that he's wasting such a huge IQ and an Olympic-level gymnastic, like, career that he just kind of, like, gave up on. Also, he quit the Marines. So they're talking in the pub that Eggsy's stepdad's goons are in, and, like, he's been told he's not allowed to, like, be there because, you know.
Yeah.
Gang, whatever.
And it's important to note, like, the reason why Eggsy did that was to try to protect his mom and especially his stepsister.
Oh, definitely.
So that's why so he's not just, like, a loser. It's no. Like, he realized if he was gone, who was going to protect them.
Right, because
he's an upstanding guy.
And he ain't no snitch. So, so his dad's goons are there in the pub at the time. And they're like, what are you doing in here? You got to get out of here. And they're, like, being totally disrespectful to Harry and call him an old guy. And he just needs to shut up and get out of the way.
And to be fair, he is wearing the glasses, so yeah.
He is wearing the government issue ugly glasses, yes. So so he gets up and he locks the door. And he's very calm. And he's like, oh, you know, manners maketh man. Do you know what that means? And then he proceeds to kick everyone's butt in the entire pub.
It's the first iconic scene. Like, this is the scene you remember when you're watching The Kingsman.
I mean,
so
I guess.
It's so iconic. It's a wonderful fight scene.
Okay. You You know how I feel about fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Eggsy finally goes home, and Dean, who is his stepfather, he starts to beat him up. And he wants to know who that old guy was that he was with, but he promised Harry Hardy wouldn't tell who he was. And so he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so he's beating him up, beating him up, beating him up. And then we see that Harry Hart has put like a bug on him, and he's been listening this whole time. And not only can he hear, but he can also communicate. And so he says, I would stop beating this kid up if I were you. And I know who you are, and I know all the things that you've been doing, and I can throw you in jail so fast your head will spin. So then Harry Hart tells Eggsy to meet him at the tailor shop that they talked about earlier. So mm-hmm. Eggsy parkours on out of there
mm-hmm.
with the goons like with chasing goons, behind yeah. him.
The goon squad.
So Harry wants to offer Eggsy a chance to change his life. So there was a funny scene that I actually thought was funny. He's like, you know, like in Trading Places, you're Pretty Woman. And then later Eggsy goes, oh, you mean like in My Fair Lady? And Harry's like, well, you're full of surprises. But he thinks he's going to be a great candidate for the Kingsmen. And the Kingsmen is basically a bunch of rich guys who lost the heirs to their fortunes in World War II, right?
So either World War I or World War II.
In one of the World Wars. And so they had all this money laying around. So what do? Oh, we create an international independent intelligence agency that has nothing to do with politics or government. We can do whatever we want because we're rich.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how things work, apparently.
They actually do in the real world, but that's beyond the point.
Which is scary. So Harry delivers Eggsy to this, immediately delivers Harry to the training center where he's going to undergo the most dangerous job interview in the world. And we know that because they say it several times.
Mm-hmm.
Where their first task is to label a body bag in case they need to mail their bodies back to their families because mm-hmm. this is the most dangerous job interview in the world. The first rule of Kingsman auditions is that you don't talk about Kingsman auditions, basically. So Eggsy isn't posh like the others, but he makes friends with one girl named Roxy, and I think she's American. And their test starts immediately with their dorm being flooded the first night with water. And Eggsy notices a two-way mirror and smashes it and frees everybody. But one of them doesn't make it, and they get scolded for not acting like a team as she is put in a body bag and carried away. I was reading about that scene. That was the first scene that they filmed.
Yeah, it was
actually an accident because there wasn't supposed to be that much flooding of water like that. And so that happened. So they're actually all panicking for real.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Isla Fisher in Now You See Me. Have you seen that movie?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh, we might need to watch that movie at some point. So, but yes, there's a similar scene, and she looks like she's drowning because she is drowning.
Oh my god.
And so, yeah.
I will never do anything with water.
All right.
That's probably why I'm not famous.
Duly noted.
I refuse to do water scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Meanwhile, Harry tries to question the professor who had been kidnapped, but during questioning, his head explodes. And Harry is also knocked unconscious, and now he's in a coma. So the professor that was being held at the whiskey house or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Is that Mark Hamill?
Yes.
Mark Hamill's in the movie.
I can't remember. That was Mark Hamill. Yes.
Okay.
I was trying to remember who it was, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Not as funny as when he was in What We Do in the Shadows, where he was the vampire that...
Exactly. command performance.
It was like, who is that? And I looked it up and I went, oh my god!
Oh yeah.
And then I was like, you have to watch this episode. And you were sitting there and I was like, do you know who this is? And you were like, no. And I was like, do you want me to tell you?
And then I think at that point he did something Mark Hamill-ish and I was like, oh my gosh, that's Mark Hamill.
Oh, you got to watch What We Do in the Shadows. It's like the best show. Anyway, we're talking about this. Okay. So, enter the dogs. I made you stop the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally checked the website, doesthedogdie.com, that my friend Carissa told me about. Thank God. Because mm-hmm. I have a real knack for choosing movies for my daughter to watch. I'm like, oh, well, let's watch this new movie that just came out. And I'll put it on. And within the first, 30 seconds, a parent will die. And mm-hmm. then she starts crying. And it's just the whole thing. She has set up that I am to preview all such movies that will be submitted for her review.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a parent and you want to watch a movie with your kid, but you want to make sure that nothing's going to be upsetting, doesthedogdie.com. Because in a movie like this, if you're going to introduce a dog, it's going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you assured me that it was going to be okay. So guys, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why later.
Mm-hmm.
So then we were able to proceed.
Because
I was I will shut this podcast down. So they all get to pick their dogs, and like all the posh guys get like a German Shepherd and like the boxer. Roxy gets the standard poodle, and Eggsy ends up with a pug because he thinks it's a bulldog and it's going to get bigger. And Roxy's just like, mm-mm. And so they have to like raise these dogs during the training program. And by the time they're trained, the dogs will be trained. And so their first task is to do this like obstacle course with these dogs. And so everybody's trying, and they're puppies. So everyone's trying to get their dogs to do what they want it to do. So what Eggsy does is he takes the dog and he puts it in his jacket, in the front of his jacket. And the dog's just like so happy. It's like a little papoose, the dog papoose. And he just does the obstacle course with the little dog and his little dog papoose. And he won that challenge. We kind of keep seeing Valentine, who is played by Samuel Jackson.
And it's really interesting what Sam Jackson does with the role. It's not your typical villain.
Mm-mm.
And if I remember correctly, he's the one who came up with a speech impediment. And so like...
Does he have a speech impediment?
Yeah, he has a lisp.
He does?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
He's like kind of a Steve Jobs.
Well, he's still cool though. Like he's just trying to be like dorky Mark Zuckerberg.
But yeah, he's not. Like...
He's like way too... I actually have a note about that. So anyway, so he's like meeting with people like the president and I guess the princess of Sweden and like prime ministers of like foreign dignitaries and like important rich people. And he's talking with them about his plan. And some of them are, like, cool with his plan. And some of them are not cool with it. And so people who are not cool with the plan get to be placed in, question mark fingers, safety against their will. And, like, his plan kind of – we'll talk a little more about his plan in a minute. But – because it's just kind of interspersed.
Yeah, and throughout the movie what's happening is famous people – every, like, news station and stuff keeps mentioning these famous people being kidnapped. And
or,
so,
like, disappearing.
Yeah, disappearing.
So Harry comes out of his coma, and we learn that the professor blew up because he had a microchip implanted in his neck. And they learn that the microchip came from Valentine's Corporation. And Valentine – as you said, is kind of a Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg type. But I felt like he was way too old to be dressing in young tech entrepreneur chic.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Is like, he's kind of geeky. It's like, he's
so, like, way behind. Like, no, dude.
He's so,
but
you know,
he's so, obviously, like, okay, you can't pull this off. You're just too cool. I'm sorry.
Well, it's funny. It's totally the Steve Buscemi meme of, like, hello, my fellow kids. Like, that's yes! What he's dressed like.
But so. He's Sam Jackson, so he just can't not be cool. So Valentine's company is offering every man, woman, and child a SIM card for his communications network. And from now on, everyone can use it for free. Free calls, free internet, free head explosions. Harry,
well, we don't know that yet.
We don't know. Sorry. We don't know that yet. Strike that from the record. Harry decides to pay Valentine a visit, and he pretends to be this wealthy, important person that Valentine would be willing to kidnap. So, also, we're interspersing, like, the job interview. This is a real long job interview. My God. So, Eggsy and the crew are thrown out of an airplane, and they have to land on a target without being detected by a radar. The only problem is that one of them, they're told, doesn't have a parachute. And so they have to work together to land everybody safely. And a few people start immediately freaking out. But Eggsy comes up with this plan to find out who doesn't have a parachute. And he makes everyone hold on to each other. But one of the rich guys can't take the pressure and he pulls his chute early. And then after each person pulls theirs, we learn that Eggsy is probably the one without the parachute. And
yeah, he's the one. Everyone else has opened their parachutes, and so we know the last one, Eggsy, was the one without a parachute.
So he's holding on to Roxy, and she pulls hers, and he's, like, holding on to her foot, basically. And they do this real hard landing, but they're the only ones that hit the target. And so Eggsy gets real mad, and he's yelling at I haven't introduced Merlin so far. Merlin is, like, the head of, like, the recruiting job interview, whatever process. His name's Merlin, code name, obviously. And so he yells at Merlin. He's, well, how come I'm the one that didn't get the shoot or whatever? And so he's like, you know, you really need to get the chip off your shoulder. And he yanks on Eggsy's ripcord, and a parachute flies out.
That was a funny scene.
He gets dragged across the
Yeah.
So but he did have a parachute.
So the first guy opens the parachute so early, I believe he's disqualified from the program.
He tells him to pack up and go home because he was being a coward. So Roxy and Eggsy, like, win the challenge.
So there's only one spot available.
Right.
And there's only...
And we're down to three people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Harry meets with Valentine at his house, and they talk about climate change and pair McDonald's with a 1945 Chateau Lafite, which I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
It goes for $3,700 a bottle. I think it was $3,700. I don't think it was $37,000.
When you said $37, I was like, okay, that's too rich for
not
my blood.
$37. Yeah, $37 for a bottle of wine is a little too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not
We're living large.
If it's over $10, it's like, ooh, maybe 13 if it's special. So anyway, he makes Valentine think that he wants to donate to his organization. And Valentine puts a tracking gel in his wine, so he'll know his every move. Mm-hmm. And in the original script, it was like, until he takes a dump.
Sounds like Matthew Vaughn.
But that didn't get into the final one, I don't think. So meanwhile, the list of important rich people who are missing is growing, as you were saying. And the remaining candidates of the program, Roxy, Eggsy, and Charlie.
Okay.
Charlie's the, like, really annoying, like, rich kid. So they're instructed to attend this party and try to win over the same target in the biblical sense. And so her name's Lady Sophie Montague Herring. And so they're trying to, like, win her over at this party. And I think Charlie was the one. Was Charlie the one negging her? Eggsy wasn't negging her. Charlie was negging her.
Basically, they go through the Pua playbook. So Pua is a pickup artist. So they were basically doing all of the. And so they were.
Pua. That's gross.
They basically are using all these all these tactics that especially work with.
And Roxy's like calling them out as they are being done.
Exactly. So they. So very clearly, none of the three of them are going to be able to woo
they're
her.
They're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
But they're like. And he's like, oh gosh, the champagne tastes funny. And she's like, oh, he's trying to address the whole group so that you crave individual attention. And he's like, no, I mean, the champagne tastes funny. Mm-hmm. And then he, like, blacks out. They've all been roofied. He's been roofied, but then we find out they all were roofied. He wakes up tied to a railway track, and a train is coming for him. And this mysterious interrogator is questioning him about the Kingsmen. But as we've said before, Eggsy ain't no snitch in it. I just made that phrase up. It's not an actual phrase.
Oh, I can tell.
I just like to say in it. But Eggsy refuses to say anything, and the train passes over him. But the track he's tied to actually, like, lowers, like, 3 feet below the train. If it was a test, just like the parachute was a test. And they're like, oh, congratulations. And he's like, oh, how did Roxy do? Oh, she passed with flying colors. Charlie's next. You want to watch? And so he watches as Charlie, like, freaks out and spills the tea. And so
everything.
They just are ashamed of him, and they leave him tied to the tracks, and they tell him to get out himself.
It was kind of one of the weaknesses of the movie is, like, he knows everything about the organization, and it's like, how are you a secret organization? Yeah.
So Eggsy gets measured up for his bespoke suit that's bulletproof and a biometric security system, and we get to see all these, like, gadgets and things, and like a pen and, like, a lighter that shoots darts or whatever, and a pen that, like, shoots poison or something. I don't know. There's a bunch of gadgets. I also learned that an Oxford shoe is any formal shoe with open lacing. Did you know that? You already knew that?
Well, from the movie.
Oh, okay.
Because I looked it up, too.
Okay. I didn't know that. And did you know that the additional decorative piece is called broguing? And that's where Oxford's, not brogues, comes from. Harry meets Eggsy's dog, JB. Jack Bauer. Not James Bond.
Not James Bond.
Not.
That was a funny joke.
Yeah. Not James Bond, not...
Jason Bourne.
Jack Bauer. And he tells him, okay, shoot him. And Eggsy refuses, thank God. Mm-hmm. And so he's basically failed the final test, and he is sent home over a dog.
With the pug.
He was sent home with his pug. So he comes back to find his mom with a black eye, and he gets into a taxi and heads out to beat up Dean. But the taxi doesn't allow him to leave because it's being controlled somehow by the Kingsmen, and drives him away back to Harry. So he's, like, yelling out the window that he's going to come beat up Dean. And then the taxi, like, rolls the window up and drives away. And everyone's like, what are you running for? And so then Eggsy finds out that Harry also had a dog. And he's disgusted to learn that he shot his dog to get the job. But actually, it was just a test. And the gun had blanks in it.
Was the dog in the bathroom or was...
The dog was, like... They were talking about the fact that he shot his dog and there was a stuffed dog sitting there.
So initially it looks like that the dog was killed.
Yes.
And he's like, no, it was, yeah.
It was blanks, and he lived to a ripe old age until he died. And then I had him stuffed. So we also learned that the recruit who was carried out of the barracks in a body bag that first night didn't actually die. She actually just works for the tech department, and she was acting like she died, and they carried her away in a body bag. So this whole thing was like, you know, not real. So the next part was really confusing to me, but like, so Harry Hart goes to this church in Kentucky. It's like a la Westboro Baptist Church, like hate group. Then we have to sit through this like awful sermon and hate speech, and not any church that I know of or would want to be a part of, or, you know, like, I'm a Christian and I do not stand for anything that they said. So please don't confuse that. But anyway,
I forgot how they did it, but basically Valentine threw a clue that made them realize, okay, we need to go and check out this church.
So Harry's wearing his glasses and they're like filming everything, so everyone like back at headquarters can see and hear what's going on. And then I guess Valentine activates the SIM card and like everyone becomes violent and starts killing each other, including Harry. But since he's the only one that's like a trained killing machine, he ends up killing everyone in the entire building.
Basically, yeah, this is the second really iconic fight scene, and
way too long.
It's a very brutal fight scene.
Yeah. Anyway, so everyone's dead, and he walks out of the church, and he meets Valentine outside on the porch. And Valentine finally explains that via his SIM card, he's going to release a neurological wave that will cause everyone to become violent and kill each other. And that's his plan for getting the population down to save the planet from global warming. And then he shoots Harry in the face. And I was like, no!
Oh, yeah.
So Eggsy's in shock, and he meets with Arthur. And so he's sitting down with him. And Eggsy notices that Arthur has got a scar behind his ear, like the one that the professor had who blew up. And they had also noticed a few other people having, like, a scar behind their ear. And they were kind of connecting that to the Valentine SIM card or whatever. So Arthur tells Eggsy of Valentine's plan to cull the population and reverse global warming, and only those who are the chosen few who have taken the microchip will be saved. And Arthur offers Eggsy a chance to join up, and he tries to poison his tea or brandy, whatever it was.
Yeah, poison.
It was
drink.
A drink. But Eggsy had already been really smart and distracted him, and then he ends up poisoning himself.
So then, he does a Princess Bride. He switches Vicini's glasses so that Michael Caine ends up poisoning himself.
Right. And so then Eggsy removes the microchip from Arthur with his handy pen, his spy pen. So now, like, okay, so Harry Hart is gone. He was Galahad. And so now there's a spot's open. So now it's Merlin, Eggsy, and Roxy to the rescue. And Roxy's going to take out the satellite that Valentine's going to use to release his violent wave. So Eggsy's going to pose as Arthur because he's got like Arthur's like cell phone ticket to the, so he can go to Valentine's safe house. He's kind of tried to set it up as a party. I think he even has like a DJ, and he's like, why is everybody so glum? I don't know, because you're going to kill everybody. And so Valentine gives him a pep talk and tells him to drink up and party, everybody. Free Wi-Fi. So Eggsy is soon discovered by his former failed recruit, Charlie, because of course he has a spot in this place. And Roxy blows up the satellite. She like rides on a jetpack up to the atmosphere, blows up the satellite. But Valentine, he quickly borrows another one, and the scheme is back on. So that was just like a lot of work for nothing. And then I guess Valentine has this biometric security system, so as long as he has his hand on his desk, it will continue to upload the satellite, and then the wave, the neurological wave, will continue. But he has to keep his hand on the desk the whole time. And so Eggsy and Merlin flip a switch, and everyone's head blows up, except because they think Valentine's got the microchip too, but his head doesn't blow up. And he's like, you think I'd be stupid enough to put one of those in my own head? And we've talked a lot about Gazelle, but she's in a lot of scenes like chopping people up with her razor legs. So Eggsy fights with Gazelle in another like way too long scene. But he has this like poisonous blade at the end of his Oxford shoe, and so he kicks her with it, and she gets poisoned and she dies. And then Eggsy takes one of her blade feet and he stabs Valentine and like tosses him over his head, and he falls dead, and his hand leaves the desk, and the wave stops. So then he goes home and he tells Dean to F off. And he moves his mom and his sister to a new house. Last scene is he has the ugly glasses on and he visits the pub.
He's taking care of his mom and baby sister.
Ugh. So he visits the pub where his stepfather and his goons are hanging out. And we have a replay of the scene where he calmly locks the door. And he says, "Manners maketh man. Let me teach you a lesson." And he puts a smack down on all the goons in the pub. So, as I said, I did not like this movie at first. I don't remember at what point I finally was, like, actually watching it and, like into it. But it took a while. And I blame that on that this is based on a comic book and it's not my cup of tea and I hate fight scenes. I don't know. It just was, like, a lot of gobbledygook at first and a lot of exposition of things I didn't understand.
It's one of those movies that has a lot of it. They, what they're doing is they're showing all the pieces without showing you the whole, so you don't know what's going on.
Right.
And so,
and all the fans that have read the comic book are like, yeah.
Well, except the Valentine is a new character.
Oh.
So again, created by Samuel Jackson, and they basically wanted him, and he's just like, okay, we're gonna do it my way, and it's like, well, it's Samuel Jackson, so I guess we're gonna.
Wish I could do that.
Yeah. Me too.
I did like how Eggsy turns into a little mini Harry.
Mm-hmm.
I was very sad that Harry had to go away.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad they didn't hurt the dog or any of the dogs. And I've always been a Colin Firth fan. But now I'm a Taron Egerhead.
Yeah, there's a lot of great acting throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really the relationship of Colin Firth and Taron Egerton that really makes
the
movie.
It's like the father he never had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, and Taron's the son he never had. So it works out.
So, I mean, that's basically all I have to say.
Wow.
Well, I saw it 3 months ago.
That's true. Yeah,
And I did come away going, okay, I really like Taron Egerton a lot. I did love the relationship between Harry Hart and Eggsy. Samuel Jackson, you're not a geek. If you try to be one, you're not. He's like the coolest geek I've ever met.
With Samuel Jackson there, you're hoping to figure out what his plan is. Mm-hmm. So it's really an interesting movie where you're kind of, in some ways, rooting for the villain a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you realize he's completely insane.
You're like, yeah, global warming sucks. Wait, what? You're going to do to
the people? What are you going to do to people? I think it's a really good action movie. Mm-hmm. I think that it's definitely skewed towards guys, but...
What?
Yeah. And not for the youngest of gentlemen, so you definitely want to be a bit older. One of the issues that I just found really hard about it was just like this independent super secret organization that like suddenly
is above the law.
Well, and you've got like 6 or 7 people who are being recruited for it, right. And then what happens to them? And then it's
they're not supposed to blab. Like, I'm surprised Charlie didn't go blab to Valentine.
Yeah,
like everything.
Yeah, so it was just that was kind of one of the tough things about it. Yeah. Anyway. So what is your rating, Corey?
Well, like I said, I hated it for like the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
but there was some saving. Things I can see why you like it. It was interesting, really confusing, but you know, I'm sometimes things confuse me. So I think, to be fair, I would have to give it 2 thumbs in the middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were gonna give it 1 thumb in the middle and 1 thumb down.
No, so. Because I can see. I mean, it was interesting. It's not my kind of movie. I think Taron Egerton really like won me over.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin Firth in those glasses. So, yeah.
Thank you for watching The Kingsman with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for not making me watch them kill the dog.
Manners maketh the man.
Well, we did it. Bye, movies.
And
only 3 months in the making.
And it's April.
It is April.
So.
April 4th.
Anyway, we promised to be quicker with these, but we got done with both spy movies.
I don't know if I should promise anything.
That was a very good run through for 3 months later.
Thank you. Well, like I said, I was checking. I'm citing my sources.
Yeah, it was funny. I remember I walked past you a couple times, and you're like, just got all these windows open. I'm just like, I'm gonna keep walking. I don't know what's going on there.
Was I not St. Helens?
No, you were in the zone. So I have learned when you're in the zone, just
leave me alone.
Leave you alone. So what are we going to watch next week?
This was the first movie I had ever seen Sandra Bullock in.
Okay. While you were sleeping.
No. And I was...
Earth Girls Are Easy.
No, she wasn't in that.
Is that Gina Davis?
Who yes, that was Gina Davis. Okay. Oh my goodness. Do we need to watch that one?
Dear God, no.
Okay, we're watching it. There's a character that I absolutely love in this movie, and she is a lady of the evening.
All right.
She's really funny. The guy who plays the love interest, one of the love interests, actually, he played Elvis in the TV movie Elvis and Me, based on the biography by Priscilla Presley, Elvis and Me.
I promise you have not seen that.
That's where I know him from. Because, of course, I watched that when I was like six with my mother. But anyway, what are we talking about? Love Potion number 9 is what you will be watching.
Yeah, so we're doing a belated Valentine's episode.
Yeah, we don't care. Why not? We're doing it.
Yeah.
Because, Valentine's Day in April.
Mine's going to be on the opposite end of the spectrum. So mine's going
to
be
have to say that that's probably true.
A very guyish guy movie, which for Valentine's Day, it can only be true romance. So Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, one of the best scenes in cinema history that I can't wait to go through.
Is it Brad Pitt? With an apple bong?
Brad Pitt was in the movie for like 30 seconds.
That's all I remember.
What is up with, like, that's all, when you ask women about true romance, that's what they remember, so.
I feel like I saw it. I don't remember anything about it, but I do remember Brad Pitt smoking an apple bong. Is that what happened?
Honey Bear.
Oh, a Honey Bear. Sorry. I got my bongs crossed.
Wow. All right. Well, with that, we can't wait to talk at you next week. So thank you for listening.
Yes, please like us and rate us. And also check us out on Facebook. And we also have an Instagram page. Thank you so much for listening to us. We have to go now because our dog's decided to have her dinner. Can you hear it?
I can.
Well, now we're drinking.
Talk at you next week.